It's time to head out on the front porch on KFRM. Grab your favorite drink, sit back, relax, and enjoy the conversation on the front porch.
Hi, this is Kyle Bauer, and today my guest on the front porch is Lucrecia Horn, and she is the park ranger for Nicodemus National Historic Site, and of course, Nicodemus, Kansas, though I'm not sure there is a real Nicodemus, Kansas. Lucrecia, is it actually an incorporated town?
Unincorporated, but still a living, breathing community with about 20 people who live here year-round. And then during the summertime, we have some of those snowbirds that come back and live here during the summertime.
Now, you are a park ranger with the National Park Service, but interestingly enough, you are originally from that area as well.
I am, yes. I am a park ranger here at Nicodemus National Historic Site, and I grew up out here. I did not live in Nicodemus, but I grew up in Hill City, which is about 17 miles to the west of Nicodemus. And with growing up out here, how we got out here is because I am a descendant of the first settlers that came out here to Nicodemus in 1877. So my great-great-great-grandparents, Tom and Zarina Johnson, they were with that first group of folks that get to Nicodemus in 1877.
And here you are, a park ranger, all these years later. Now, I'm sure at some point you were a park ranger somewhere else before you came back to Nicodemus.
Yes. So my career started right after I got out of high school and then going to college. They needed a park guide here in Nicodemus, and that's when we were first established as a park, one of the parks in the Park Service Unit in 1996, and they needed a park guide. And so I was familiar with my family history, but being young, I didn't care too much about it. All I knew is that this was the best paying job out here out here in this area. So I was like, of course I'll work there in Nicodemus and get paid over the summertime. So I started off doing that and then going to school. I finished my degree over at Fort Hays State University, a degree in communications. And then I had some mentors who were talking to me and asking, did I ever think about having a career with the Park Service? And I had never really thought about that. And they were encouraging me to apply for permanent positions. And so I went ahead and applied for different permanent positions out there. And I got on as a park ranger over at Jefferson National Expansion Memorial over in St. Louis. And most people call it the Arch. And so I worked there. That was my first permanent job.
Okay. And then how many years before you were assigned back at Nicodemus?
Yes. Yeah, so I worked there for about 3 years. And then I stopped working with the Park Service for almost 15 years. And then I was like, I had that urge to come back home. And so I really started trying to get back to Nicodemus and working with the Park Service. And it took a little bit of time, but I was finally able to get back here. I got back to Hill City about 10 years ago now, and then I've been back with the Park Service here in Nicodemus for about 7 years.
Well, how cool is that? So
yes.
Why was it that Nicodemus was located where it was? I understand it was promoted as a black settlement, but why there?
Excellent question. A lot of people want to know that. So it's the oral history piece is that W.R. Hill, white gentleman, born in Indiana. He had gone around and he was a town speculator, and he tried to create towns and had not been successful. But the oral history part of that is that they said that he falls asleep by a cottonwood tree down by the Solomon River, and wakes up with the brilliant idea that he's going to create an all-black town and charge these folks $5 to have a plot of land. And so he's in this area down by the Solomon River, and he says, this is where it's going to be. And so he gets the 160 acres through the Homestead Act, and then they go and they promote Nicodemus to the folks, the black folks in the South.
And then now, it isn't any coincidence, though, that his name is the same name that's on Hill City, Kansas.
Right. So after he helps get Nicodemus established, because there are at least 6 black ministers that help form the Nicodemus Town Company, Hill leaves Nicodemus, and he wants a town of his own. That was his ultimate goal. And so he goes to the west, 17 miles to the west, and he creates Hill City.
Well, and it was very near the center of the county, and it appears that in the western two-thirds of the state, the county seat generally ended up being the town in the center of the county.
Yes, and Hill City is the Graham County. Hill City is the county seat.
So those folks that were convinced to come out, how did they contact them? Was there ads in newspapers, or did they have people traveling the South handing out, if you will, trade bills, or how did they get the word to them?
Yes, so there were handbills that they had, and there are plenty of them out there on the internet that folks can go look at. One of them that's pretty much seen around the country is that all colored people that want to go to Nicodemus, Kansas, can do so for $5. And so it has the information on the handbill. And one of the gentlemen that helped develop Nicodemus, he was a W.H. Smith, and he is a minister from Kentucky. And so he was like, we can go back to Kentucky, where I'm from, and go to the churches and tell these folks about the land of milk and honey and convince them to come out here and occupy the land. And so that's what they do. They go to Kentucky, Georgetown, Lexington area. They're going to the churches. And so word of mouth and then handbills are what are given to the folks to convince them to convince and recruit them to come out here to Nicodemus.
And the first year when most people came was what year?
1877. They get here September of 1877, and they're told that that there are plenty of trees for you to build your homes, and there's coal, the C-O-A-L, there's coal out there to heat your homes, and plenty of wild game. And if you want a farm, you can just take your seed and just throw it in the wind, and you'll have a bountiful harvest, and that you guys can be landowners. And so these folks are excited about this opportunity, and they get on the train. They tell them to be ready in September. They get on the train in Sadieville, Kentucky, ride the train for almost 5 days, and they get off the train in Ellis, Kansas. Now, Ellis, Kansas is 35 miles to the south of Nicodemus. And so they get off the train, and then they have to walk over to Nicodemus. And that was about a 3-day walk that they had to make to get over here to Nicodemus. And when I, tell the story and I talk about it, I just try to imagine what my ancestors and what these folks were thinking as they're riding the train, and the further west they're coming, and they're like, well, wait a minute, where are we going? Where are the trees? What's going on?
Yeah. And then to get there, and they didn't have horses or wagons or anything, so all their belongings had to be transported in some other manner. Maybe they left them behind and then had a wagon bring them later, but it wasn't like they were planning on that last 35 miles, I suspect.
No, they were. But so Hill, W.R. Hill, he rents some supply wagons there in Ellis. And so they were able to put some of their belongings on the wagons, but they did have to carry some of their stuff over here to Nicodemus. And they're not prepared because they're told that they're coming to a town. And so they're thinking they'll be able to go to a general store, the blacksmith, and things like that. So they're told they're coming to a town that they will have to help build up, but they didn't know that they were coming to absolutely nothing. And so when they reach Nicodemus, it's just open prairie. And so people are upset and disillusioned a little bit about the situation.
Well, let's pick it up there after the break, because I can't imagine how disillusioned they are. And we'll talk about coming there in September, just before winter. So, so we are talking to Lucretia Horn. She is a park ranger at the Nicodemus National Historic Site. Join us after the break for more On the Front Porch. Welcome back to On the Front Porch. I have Lucretia Horn. She is a park ranger at the Nicodemus National Historic Site, of course, Nicodemus, Kansas, which is on Highway 24 near Hill City, Kansas. Lucretia, when we went to the break, you were talking about the people had just gotten there, and they thought they were coming to a town. And in fact, I read somewhere in here, they said, where is the town? And there was two little wisps of smoke coming from sod homes. And he said, well, there it is.
Yes. Yes. They that comes from Walina Hickman. And she says, I looked with all my eyes to see. And she's like, where is Nicodemus? I don't see it. And someone pointed to the smoke coming from the ground. That's Nicodemus, and she said she began to cry when she saw that. And so, yeah, people were a little upset with Hill and Smith and everything, because they thought it was at least going to be somewhat of a town. And so,
do you know about how many people were in that initial group?
Yes, there were about 350 people.
Oh my.
In that first group, yes.
A whole train load, practically.
Yes. A whole train load. So it was a nice amount of people. And in our documentation, we find that about 60 families turn around and go and live in Ellis, because they're like, we're not staying here. We're going to live in Ellis. And then we do have at least two families who can afford to go all the way back to Kentucky, and they do that. But the bulk of the group, they stay, and they make it work. And so, they're the number one reason that they stay is because, well, they didn't have any money to go anywhere else, but they are landowners. They're landowners.
And so they get there in September. They don't have any homes. We know that trees are few and far between. That first winter had to be difficult.
It was very difficult. We have documentation of the folks almost starving to death. And so, not enough trees to build homes. And so they had to live in dugouts. And so the winter is going to be quickly approaching. And so they figure out that they don't have time to build sod homes. They have to live in dugouts. And so they have to dig down into the ground and build their homes that way. And so that's what the group started doing. They started building their dugouts. we have record of the Potawatomi Native Americans helping the folks in Nicodemus that first winter because they almost starved to death because they just are not prepared.
Well, I couldn't remember if it was if the buffalo herds had already been decimated and or moved out. Was there game to hunt?
The buffalo had already been removed. There was some game to hunt out here during that time. But they just were not prepared for the winter coming up fastly approaching. So that first winter they almost starved.
I assume that if that many people came, there was probably a wide variety of skills those folks had. I mean, they all probably weren't farmers.
You're absolutely correct. Excellent observation on that. So the people that they are bringing out to Nicodemus, they're recruiting folks who have some type of skill or trade because they need these people to be able to help build the town up and have businesses here. So you have carpenters and blacksmiths and folks who had clothing shops or serve food. Those type of folks are the people that they were recruiting to come out here to Nicodemus. They had a skill or a trade, plus they had a little bit of money. And so they needed to be able to afford their train ticket out here to Nicodemus, and then they needed to be able to afford paying their $5 for their plot of land.
Mm. And that was just the registration fee for the land.
Yes. Okay. And it was supposed to take that $5 was a dollar for the treasury, the filing fee for your little plot of land, and there was supposed to be a 200-man militia out here to help protect to protect the folks, uh-huh. And that's what that $5 included.
I think about the location of Nicodemus, and it's not down by a stream. Did they have adequate water that first year? Did they have to dig a well, or did they go down to the stream, or do you know what they did for water?
Yeah, so for water, the town site of Nicodemus is 161 acres, and we throw the one in there because the Solomon River is to the south, about a mile and a half to the south of the town site. And so in the beginning, they had to go down to the Solomon to get water. But then eventually, they have wells here on the main street area and on different areas on the main part of Nicodemus. They had wells.
So after they made it through winter and the spring came, I would imagine there was people at that point second-guessed themselves and left as well, or were there more that came?
So there were more that came. The first group that I told you about, there's about 350 people in that first group. And then the spring of 1878, we have it documented that about 150 more people come, and then there's another major group of about 200 people that come. So people are writing home and they're telling them, you know, if you're going to come, you can be a landowner, you can have your own business, but if you come, bring every piece of equipment that you can and as much money as you can.
So then the town prospered for a while?
Yes. The peak of Nicodemus is like 1885 through 1889. And the census has it at about 700 people. And that's the town site and the township. And the township of Nicodemus, because there's people out there with their homestead properties and a little satellite communities within the township of Nicodemus. So the peak of it is like 1885 through 1889, and there are newspapers, pharmacy stores, general stores, the blacksmith, churches, a doctor here, banks, hotels, everything that a small little town needed, Nicodemus had it. And there were movers and shakers here that were helping Nicodemus grow as far as political folks. Edward P. McCabe, he was a very intelligent man who ends up being the state auditor for Kansas. He's out here, and he's doing great things for Nicodemus. And then we have the Sayers families who have a bunch of lawyers that come out of their families that are just extremely intelligent and doing things for Nicodemus. And so the town, the community of Nicodemus is prospering, and it's looking good. And they have the hope of the railroad coming through the town.
Well, we're going to go into that on the next segment because that ends up having a pivotal part. One thing I am, need to have clarified, everybody that was recruited in Nicodemus was black, but was the town and or the county segregated?
So it's recruited as an all-black town. However, there are white folks that live here in Nicodemus for in the beginning for a while. And when we go into the next segment talking about the railroad, I'll explain why some of the white folks in Nicodemus end up leaving. But Graham County over in Hill City, of course, that was the sister town, and that was basically all white.
Well, that is Lucrecia Horn. She is the park ranger for Nicodemus National Historic Site in Nicodemus, Kansas. And of course, that's Graham County on Highway 24. So join us after the break when we pick it up from there for On the Front Porch. Welcome back to On the Front Porch. I have Lucrecia Horn. She is the park ranger for Nicodemus National Historic Site. I'll be honest with you, Lucrecia. I did not know it was a National Historic Site. I drive through there, and I knew there was a museum. But, I mean, it is funded by the federal government.
Yes, yes, yes. You guys, it's tax dollars at work. And it's beautiful, because it tells the whole story. I love working with the Park Service because it's very inclusive, and it looks to tell everybody's story and preserve everyone's story. And so I love that. Nicodemus became a national landmark in 1975. And then my cousin Angela and Senator Dole and my cousin Burl Schweitzer, they were very hard in making Nicodemus become a unit of the Park Service, and we became a National Historic Site in 1996.
I'm glad you mentioned Burl Schweitzer, because there'd be people listening that would recognize that name. I met Burl when I was in college, he had come back to Kansas State to work for the university, and my father-in-law played football with him, and so I was introduced to him, and he was a legend for centuries or for decades, and that's your cousin.
Yes, that is my cousin. So his mother, cousin Ora Schweitzer, her mother Clara, stay with me, folks.
Yeah,
cousin Ora's mother Clara. And my great-great-grandfather, Charles, they were brothers and sisters.
Wow.
So that's how I'm cousins with Cousin Verl, and we love Cousin Verl. He was a phenomenal athlete and just very intelligent and a farmer, and he cared and loved for Nicodemus, and he wanted it to be preserved, and so he did everything that he could to help do that. And for you folks that know, football and track and baseball, he played at K-State when it was the Big Eight way back then, and then he got to play for the Green Bay Packers for a while. So we love Cousin Verl.
So is Nicodemus unique in that? Was it the only community that was promoted for Black people to have an opportunity to own land?
Excuse me. Not at that time. We were not unique in that aspect, because there were several Black little communities that were popping up all over. In Kansas, there were at least seven little Black communities
really?
That popped up. Yes. And then you have them in... there were in Colorado, California, Nebraska, Oklahoma, South and North Dakota. So these Black little communities were popping up all over. But Nicodemus is unique because west of the Mississippi, we're the only surviving and oldest Black community that's still alive. And so that's where we get that distinction.
So when I hear about Nicodemus, a lot of times it's thrown almost into the same sentence with Bogue, but mm-hmm. that is really, really incorrect, because Bogue was an absolute competitor in the early days.
Yes. So Bogue, to back up to talk about the railroad. So Nicodemus is booming. And the people are excited because the way that some of the tracks are being laid, it looks like that there should be a railroad that comes right through Nicodemus. And so they're encouraged, and they just know this is just going to make the town just even better than what it already is. Well, the railroad engineer and Hill, W.R. Hill, they are in cahoots with each other, and Hill convinces him to bypass Nicodemus. And so the railroad tracks go 5 miles southwest of Nicodemus and ends up creating the town of Bogue. And so that's how Bogue was created, because the engineer creates the town of Bogue for the railroad to go through. And so Nicodemus is devastated when that happens. And the few white folks that did live here in Nicodemus, they're like, you know, this town is going to end up dying because you needed the railroad to survive. So they take their families and their businesses, and they head west. And Nicodemus is devastated when that happens.
So the town of Bogue then became probably a stop where they got coal, wood, and or water for the railroad before they went into Hill City.
Yes. And I know I'm kind of jumping around a little bit, but when we had spoke about Cousin Verl, it's fun because we get folks in here, some I don't like to say older folks, I'll say seasoned folks who come in and they're like, I remember Bogue being they had just phenomenal athletes that came out of Bogue. And so it's funny to me. And when I talk about it, it's because when the school shut down here in Nicodemus, then they sent the kids over to Bogue. And so you have this little community of kids from Nicodemus that are sent over to Bogue, and they're just over there dominating in football and track and basketball. And we get folks in here all the time that just remember about those different teams that came out of Bogue.
Yeah, and in the meantime, the founders of Nicodemus are all rolling over in their grave.
That should have been our football team.
Yeah. Exactly. So as I hear this story and my imagination runs wild, and it's like, so was there one particular person who owned that land where Bogue ended up being established?
You know what? I don't know that.
Well, my thought was it might have been Mr. Hill, but I don't know. So the population then probably started to go down after that happened.
Yes. The population starts to go down. People are still sticking around because, once again, they're landowners. And they really still don't have any money to really pick up their families and leave. And so people are still sticking around. But you fast forward to like the 40s, 1940s, 50s, and 60s. They've had tough times during the Dust Bowl and the grasshoppers eating up crops. And so you fast forward to 1940s, 50s, and 60s. You have those generations of kids that, you know, they don't want to stick around and farm. They are heading off to the armed services, or they're going to the city to find work, or they're starting to go to college. And that's when there is a drastic decrease in the population, of nicotine.
Well, and that isn't that much of a different story than much of rural Kansas. Pretty much, I suspect that Graham County is probably right on line with most of the counties in that area with its population decline.
Yes, that's very accurate.
So do you still have family in the area then?
I do. So right here in Nicodemus, there are about 20 folks that live here, and we're all related. Yes. Once you get all those families that are here and then they start marrying in, you get that bottleneck. And so we end up all being related. And my mother used to joke and say that when she was finally old enough that my grandmother would let her date, she couldn't date any of the black boys out here because they were all cousins. And so, all 20 of us that live here in Nicodemus, we're all related. And then over in Hill City, we're pretty much all related to the folks in Hill City as well.
I don't want to dwell on this, but until somewhat recently, a lot of the nation had significant bigotry, I guess I'll say forced segregation or imagined segregation. Was that area ever like that, or for the most part, because it was in its roots, it really didn't feel the bigotry?
It's very interesting. We have a video that we play for in our visitor center, and it's a lot of the third generation descendants talking about what it was like growing up in Nicodemus. And so there's a piece of the video where my Aunt Charlotte Bates, she talks about when they would have dances here in Nicodemus, and there would be two platforms. And so she says, you know, there was a platform for the black folks to dance on and a platform for white folks to dance on. Hmm. And I find that very interesting. I was like, okay, they want to come and have a good time, but there were still different, you know, two different platforms that they danced on. Over in Stockton, where they would go and get supplies and things like that, it's understood that Stockton was a sundown town. And so, you know, blacks had to be out of town before the sun came down. Over in Hill City, there were some places and establishments where they had where black folks would have to be served from out of the back door, or, you know, at the movie theater, you're sitting up on at the top of the movie theater. So situations like that. And I say it's unique because then we also hear about the camaraderie and folks helping each other out. And so my cousin Angela says it best. In certain situations, it's a proximity thing out here. You're out here in the rural area. You don't have time to be a bigot or yeah, discriminate when you need help. I need help, so just please come and help. Yeah. And so in those situations, you know, you come and you help your neighbor. And so that's why I say Nicodemus is unique in that aspect.
That's Lucrecia Horn. She is a park ranger at Nicodemus National Historic Site, but she grew up in the area and has much of the area that she's related to, people in that area. Join us after the break for the final segment, where we're going to talk more about the National Historic Site and some of their annual events they have there. Join us after the break for more On the Front Porch. Welcome back to On the Front Porch. My guest today is Lucrecia Horn, and she is a park ranger at Nicodemus National Historic Site. We've talked about the history of the community. Lucrecia, though, how, and you alluded to it once before, but how does that process work that it ends up being a national historic landmark? That had to be a long, drawn-out process.
Yes, a very long, drawn-out process. There were some smart enough people within the community that realized and saw that some of the historic buildings were being, they needed to be torn down. And so they started to realize that, wait a minute, we have something. They've known that we have something special here and it needs to be preserved. So they put a little committee together to figure out what they could do that. And so that first step was to become a national landmark district, to be recognized in that aspect. And so they were able to get that established. And that was in 1975. I think either 75 or 76. I think it's 75. but then you move forward, and then we're recognized as a landmark district. But then there's really no funds or means to preserve these historic buildings and pictures and artifacts and things like that. And so I mentioned her, Angela Bates. She's our historian. She's forgotten more than I'll ever know about Nicodemus. Her and Cousin Verl, he was saying, you know, Angela, you need to do something to figure out how we can preserve these things. And so she started off with the Nicodemus Historical Society. And so she was reaching out to family members to, you know, send us your pictures, your you know, manuscripts, any diaries. She started doing that, and family members were reaching back out to her and sending her all of those items. And then her and Angela and Verl figured out that, you know, maybe we could be a historic site through the Park Service. And so Senator Dole had been out here several times before to eat at my Aunt Ernestine's restaurant.
Okay.
Some of you folks may know Ernestine's restaurant. So she was famous in this area for her barbecue and fried chicken and dinner, family style dinners that she would do. And so Senator Dole had been out here several times to Nicodemus. And so Angela reached out to Senator Dole and told her what she was trying to do for Nicodemus. And he was an excellent advocate for it. And so it took a few years to get done, but he helped push us over the mark.
And that was in 1996 then that you became the national site?
Yes.
Well, let's talk about, for people who haven't been through it, and I drive by on 24 many, many times a year. So what will they see when they come to Nicodemus?
Right. So don't blink, you guys, when you're on Highway 24, because you'll miss us if you blink. But if you slow down and you pull off into Nicodemus, you'll see that we have 5 historic buildings, and we have signs in front of them that give you some information about what the buildings were used for. Now, the Park Service owned the AME Church, African Methodist Episcopal Church, and so they were able to put money into the church and restore the church. So that building, you are able to go inside and see what it looked like as a church, and it's beautiful. The Township Hall, which was a part of the WPA plan, is a typical township building that was erected out in these areas during that time. They built that. They started in 1937 and finished in 1939, and it's made out of limestone, and it's beautiful. And that's what the Park Service, we use that as our visitor center. And so if you come inside, you'll be able to see a 15-minute long film that talks about Nicodemus. We have exhibits inside. We have a park store. And then we have our staff who's here to answer questions. We have our district number one schoolhouse that, you know, we are trying to work with and purchase that building. And then we have the First Baptist Church, that the old First Baptist Church that the Park Service is looking to purchase through a friends group so that we can restore that building. So those are some of the things that you'll see here in Nicodemus. And then you may see some folks who are out in their yards or working on their gardens or working on their homes. You may see a couple of older homes that are dilapidated and need to be torn down, but that's just the part of the older town that that you might see that folks are going to put some work into.
I'm curious, both those churches you mentioned, I wasn't surprised to hear a Baptist church coming from Kentucky, and then the name for the other church was long enough that I can't repeat it. How many different churches were there in town?
So the two denominations, so the AME, African Methodist Episcopal Church.
Okay.
And then the Baptist denomination.
Okay. And both of those buildings are still there today?
Yes, yes, yes. The newer Baptist church is right next to the old Baptist church, and the newer one was built in the 70s. And we still have church there on Sundays, so if you want to come and attend a service on Sunday, you can come on out. So those were the churches that were on the town site, but within the township, out in the country. Uh-huh. There was Mount Carmel that was out there, Mount Olive, and so a couple more churches out there for the country folks.
So before I forget this, what are the hours that you're open?
Yes. Let me start off. We are closed Tuesdays and Wednesdays. So we are open Thursday through Monday, 9 to 5.
Okay. All right. That's easy enough to remember. So you have a homecoming type celebration somewhat regularly?
Oh, yes. Yes. So Emancipation Celebration, and we call it our homecoming, and we've been doing it for 146 years annually.
Goodness.
So
wow.
So every year for 146 years. And at one time, it was it rivaled the Kansas State Fair back in like the 1910s. It was huge. They would have politicians that would come out, have baseball games because we had the baseball teams out here, and dances and food, and they could talk about having at least 2,000 to 3,000 people that came out during those years for the homecoming celebration. So been doing it for 146 years. It's the last weekend in July, the last full weekend in July. So we picked the hottest possible time ever to have the celebration. And so folks start coming out the beginning of that week. We have activities that Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Most of the activities are on Saturday. We have a parade. The Buffalo Soldiers are in the parade. We have a dance. We have a town hall. We talk about a virtual family tree. It's a beautiful time. Food vendors are out. And each year, the amount of people ebb and flow. So no less than 500 all the way up to about 1,500 people come out for the celebration.
And that's the last weekend in July every year?
Every year, last weekend in July, that full weekend.
Well, it's been a pleasure. That's been Lucretia Horn. She is a park ranger for the Nicodemus National Historic Site in Nicodemus, Kansas. I assume, even though Nicodemus is not incorporated, that if anyone Googles it, that'll lead them right to your town.
Yes, yes, it will lead them right to our town. You can go on YouTube and see videos of us, articles. Google will show you how to get here, and we'll leave the light on for you if you decide to come.
Okay, that's Lucretia Horn, park ranger for Nicodemus, Kansas National Historic Site, and she has been my guest today on The Front Porch. This is Kyle Bauer.